It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley are here. Actually, they're together in Manhattan at CUNY. Wow, they're going to do the show next to each other for a change. That'll be fun. We're going to talk about turning your Android phone into a Microsoft phone. We have to because it's the end of the line for the Surface phones or the Microsoft phones. Is it the end of the line for Surface hardware in general? Paul will debunk that rumor. And a whole lot more all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 539, recorded Wednesday, October 11th, 2017. Yesterday's office, tomorrow. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Check out this week's menu and get $30 off your first delivery with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/windows. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/windows and entering the promo code Windows. And by WordPress. Your customers want to find you. Build a WordPress.com website and help them connect with your business. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft, and two of the best in the biz are here on the left. Yes, on the left today. Mary Jo Foley from AllAboutMicrosoft.com, her ZDNet blog. On the right, in the blue trunks, Paul Thurrott from Thurrott.com.
Hello.
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 Hello, both of you. It's great to see you. And today we have to thank Jeff Jarvis and our friends at the City University of New York who provided you with an elegant office space.
Leo, if you go to my Twitter account.
You've tweeted it.
Twitter.com/Thurrott. You will see an image that depicts Mary Jo Foley's incredibly technical setup today, in which I believe she is using what appears to be a paper towel box of some kind to hold up her web camera. What is that?
I went to the ladies' room here, and I stole a bunch of paper towels from there that were just sitting there. But I'm going to put them back at the end of the show.
That is amazing.
You know what?
It works. I can't see
right,
it.
Right, it works.
Work.
It just works.
Yeah. Listen, this is the depth that we go to make this happen.
You will do to make this show go.
Yep.
Actually, what it tells me is how foolish I was to build a multi-million dollar studio. I could have just...
Yep. Also, cats like to play with it, too.
Oh, yeah. Now, is Sirachi at home? I hope you didn't put him in a box and keep taking...
He is home.
Yeah.
He's home.
Good.
All right.
And if he's in a box, it was by his own design. The cat loves boxes.
Yeah, cats do. It's, they feel safe in there.
They do.
Yeah. You know what? What shouldn't feel safe? Windows Phone.
Yeah.
Joe Belfiore put a nail in the coffin, right? On Windows Phone.
We're running out of room for nails. I got to be honest here. I don't know where the nail went.
You know, I have mixed feelings. On the one hand, I'm sad because it should have succeeded. It was a great operating system. It was unique. It would have been nice to have three choices instead of just two. But at the same time, this poor thing has been dragging its tail on the cement for miles. And I think it's time just to say, yeah.
It's about 2 years past time.
Yeah.
But yes, yes.
And all this, does this mean all this speculation about a Surface phone is... for not.
You know what? I would say yes, but maybe why don't you? Do you have his quote ready to go, or do you have that?
The Belfiore quote?
He might be looking for it.
Or do you mean the Satya Nadella quote?
No, I mean the Joe Belfiore one, because he actually specifically mentioned first party hardware.
Yeah, I don't have it.
The gist of it is that the focus of Microsoft's effort is not on two things, which are the Windows 10 mobile operating system and phones, hardware. They will, of course, support Windows 10 Mobile with security updates, quality updates, I guess we call them. But there will be no more new features, no more versions of the OS or whatever.
Yeah. So Joe, when asked, is it time to leave the Windows Phone platform?
There we go.
Depends who you are. Many companies still deploy to their employees.
For example, if you are a human being and have a choice, you might want to make the right decision and buy a phone that people like.
Yeah. We'll support them. Yeah. But what about apps? Yes, that's a real problem. Yeah. We cannot fix ourselves. That was the ultimate problem. Even Joe referred to that. Is that you can't, you know, he even said we paid for apps.
Yeah, he did. I'm fascinated he admitted that because when Windows Phone 8 was coming out, I received a bunch of internal documentation that provided me with their strategy for making this platform succeed, which involved paying app developers to port their apps to Windows Phone. And if that failed, to pay third-party developers to develop versions of those apps for Windows Phone. And they paid millions and millions of dollars.
Paid money, wrote apps for them, he said.
Yeah. Facebook, for example, which Microsoft started. Or did they start it? Well, I think maybe they financed that one. But, Microsoft made apps themselves for the platform for third-party apps. Yeah.
So there you go. I mean, I think it's worth acknowledging, but I think it's really important to say that it was a good platform. It's just Microsoft came to the table, I think, too late.
Right? Too late.
I would just temper that a little bit because I feel like it was a really good idea. The implementation maybe didn't match up to the promise. And they had remember, they switched underlying platforms at least three times in there.
Right.
Which really screwed up the developer. You know, the developers who were targeting Windows Phone were screwed up by those moves. And they also went down some paths that were ultimately unsuccessful, integrated hubs and so forth. You know, they had this notion that, you know, instead of worrying about whether you're using Facebook or SMS messaging or whatever, you could use a single messaging app. And for an end user, this is something I still want. I don't want to have to worry about that stuff. Or if you went into the Photos app, you could, the Photos Hub at the time, you could integrate with all of the services you use. So if you use Flickr and, Google Photos or whatever the services might be, that stuff would all be there. And this is another thing. It sounds wonderful for a user. You don't have to worry about that stuff. It's a great idea. But it leaves out one crucial component, which is that those services don't want that. And Facebook wants you to use their app or their apps. They don't want you to access Facebook features from within integrated parts of the OS, which is what Microsoft originally implemented for them. Flickr and Google Photos or whoever does not want you to access their service through some Photos experience on a phone. They want you to load their app. It's got their branding. It's got their style. It's got their stuff. You know, they want to interact directly with their own customers. So there were some really good ideas. I mean, it was thoughtful. You know, when you think about the explosion that was the iPhone and what the various responses were to them, you have companies that were in denial for a long time, like RIM or BlackBerry. You've got a company like Google that basically said, well, we'll just copy it. You know, easy. We'll just copy the iPhone. And then Microsoft responded differently. They said, look, well, let's not just copy them. Let's try to do things better where we can. You know, let's really think this thing through. Of course, they took too much time as well. But it's too bad.
But someone's going to say but. There still are rumors about something called Andromeda, which is some kind of a mobile platform that Microsoft is believed to still be building, despite what Joe Belfiore tweeted.
Well, I don't think those two things are
mutually exclusive.
Right? Yeah. The thing you're referring to, the thing that Satya Nadella kind of hints at in his book, I think is more of a different kind of mobile device. The thing you sort of referred to, if it were a Surface device, is Surface Mobile.
Right.
Right.
Yep. Right. Yes. To say they're completely out of first-party mobile hardware, I wouldn't go that far, but I would say they are not going to make a consumer phone handset, which, by the way, is something they've said for 2 years now, that they were not going to make any more consumer handsets.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Joe said, he said we want to give our users the best experience on other platforms. And actually, they've been doing a lot for Android lately, which is interesting. I mean, for a while, it was an iOS thing. You know, the first Office, Touch Office was iPad. And
It's actually still fair to say, by the way, that many Microsoft mobile apps or whatever come out first still on iOS for some reason. I feel like they have more experience or maybe even expertise on that platform. But, of course, Android is wide open. And one of the nice things about Android is they can take over the system in many ways. You know, get a Microsoft home screen, a Microsoft lock screen, a Microsoft keyboard.
That's a good point. I mean, they brought Arrow back, right, which is their launcher. Right. I mean, if you're using an Android phone with all of that, how is that different than a Windows phone, really?
I know. They've said that for a while, too, right? They made that point. Like Satya Nadella, I forget what event that was, he held up his phone and he said, I have a I think he had an iOS phone and said, this is a Microsoft phone. I'm going to call it the Microsoft phone.
Wow. Wow. He said that? Wow.
He did.
I missed that one.
That
must have disheartened a few people.
I'm not sure how familiar you are with the Windows fans. They're a motley group. they're really dedicated to this thing that, and a lot of them, I think, have a hard time understanding that the world has kind of moved on. And unfortunately, it's amazing to me, but we're already getting complaints from people who say, you know, this Microsoft launcher, Arrow launcher thing is cute and everything, but what I really want is Tiles. I want this. I want that. You know, what they want is Windows 10 Mobile or Windows Phone. They want that experience. Maybe on Android, or, you know, and I get that. But the way I've described this to a couple of people, I think just via email by this point, is that, you know, the Arrow launcher, the Microsoft launcher, as we're now calling it, is in many ways a more modern take on some of the principles that were behind Windows Phone in the beginning. And so the specifics might be a little different, right? It's not really easy or possible to do Tiles on Android for the same reason, by the way, the timeline was delayed from Windows 10. You have to have buy-in from the developers that make the apps. Otherwise, this interface just sits there by itself and doesn't do anything. So you can't have live tiles unless apps know about live tiles. So it's kind of a chicken egg thing. And that's never going to happen. No one's ever going to contort their Android apps to support some live tile scheme that Microsoft makes. But I think the thing that was really cool about Windows Phone is, and the idea behind Windows Phone is sort of what I was saying earlier, this idea of integration and these hubs and everything. And there was a people-centric approach, you know. So one of the things you can do on the Microsoft launcher is you can drag down a shortcut to a user. And I could say, you know, I want Mary Jo on my home screen as an icon. And when I tap on that icon, it could either just bring up a card that has the different things I can do, like send her an email, send her a phone call, send her a text message, or I could hardwire it to a specific action. I could say, when I tap on this icon, I always want to call Mary Jo on her primary cell phone number or whatever. Mm-hmm. We can argue over the implementation details, but that was the kind of the central point behind Windows Phone from the very beginning. And so I guess what I'm trying to say, as kindly as possible, is maybe we could let go of the past a little bit, and as Microsoft has, by the way, and kind of accept the world for what it is and see what's out there. I mean, by the way, there are other launchers, too. I mean, you may be beholden to Microsoft for whatever reason, but the stock Android launcher isn't terrible. Samsung has their own launcher. There are many popular third-party launchers on Android. I'm not really up on that too much. And then, you know, Microsoft makes one as well. You can try that, too.
Yeah, I mean, so both of you are now. I know Mary Jo's on a Android phone.
Android.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Paul, what are you using?
I'm also using an Android phone. So I had been using primarily an iPhone, I would say, for the past year and a half. I switched to Android on the eve of the iPhone announcement, and having seen what they announced, I actually feel okay about that. I have ordered a Pixel XL, the new one, so I will roll
I
over.
Yeah, that's going to be the one to get.
Yeah.
You got the big one, the bezel-less version.
That's right.
Yeah. I think that I always like to be with the Google stuff because they're going to keep it up.
I have a strong affinity for it's kind of pureness, pure. You know, and I like that on the Microsoft side with like signature PCs or whatever.
Right. I like that. Although I've been carrying, until I get the Pixel XL, the Note 8.
Yeah.
It's nice. It's a really nice screen. I have to say, nobody makes better screens than Samsung.
I really like those phones. I would be A-okay with one of those. But in my own little kind of private calculus for what's important on a smartphone, there's a bunch of stuff. But I've come to understand that I really like being on Project Fi
Yes. And of course, Phi is great. I forgot you were Phi. Yeah.
Yeah. It nicely limits your choices, obviously. I think that's going to change. But
well, you can.
But it really helps.
Motorola,
it helps your laser focus on what's important, because once you know that's the case, you can make your decision.
Absolutely right. Yeah. And I think the Pixel 2 will be very.
I think it's going to be pretty close. Yeah. It won't have I don't think it will have that nice curved side thing.
I don't know how good that is. I hit that all the time.
It should be okay.
Yeah. And the main point is that you then put on it, if you want, you can make it very Microsoft centric. You then put on everything that you need. Yep. In fact, I don't think I'll ever use it, but I could use Edge on Android soon, right?
Yes.
Tell me about that. That's weird.
Yes. So Microsoft announced right the day after we did Windows Weekly last week that they were coming out with Edge apps for iOS and Android. So they didn't actually take the Edge browser and port it to these platforms. They couldn't, because they needed to use the rendering engines of both iOS and Android natively. But what they did do is take the look and feel of Edge so that people can be able to sync their bookmarks, reading lists, and all of those kinds of things across the platforms if they are Edge users on Windows 10. But the real reason they did this was a little more complicated, I think. So at Build, Microsoft talked about this whole idea of, you know, we realize we are not in the mobile space, in the consumer handset space. So the way we want to kind of come at the market is to put Windows 10 PCs at the center and try to make it so that if you have a Windows 10 PC and an iOS or an Android device, you'll be able to connect more seamlessly across these devices. And the feature that they do this with is called Connect to PC, or Connect to your PC. I can never remember which way it is.
Continue
to PC. Right. So the idea for them, you know, kind of like the big picture idea, is we want to keep Windows relevant to users' computing experiences, even if they're using an iOS or an Android device. The way we do that is, we realize that sometimes people do want to look at things on a bigger screen or work with things on a bigger screen. And so in those cases where, say, you have a spreadsheet on your phone, but you actually want to manipulate it on your PC, they'll allow you to seamlessly send yourself the link to what you're working on so that you can open it right on your PC. It'll open automatically if you want, or you can save it for later and have it open later. I think it's kind of an ingenious idea. I'm not sure how many people are going to take advantage of it, but it's an interesting, kind of Hail Mary pass to see if they can keep Windows at the center.
It's a little convoluted.
It is.
Because if you're familiar with how sharing works on a mobile device, you know that within some app there'll be a share icon of some kind. You tap it and the share sheet comes up, whatever it looks like on Android or iOS. And that continue on PC icon is one of the choices, right?
Oh,
so,
well, that's not too bad. That's intuitive.
It's not, yeah. But the reason to have Edge come over is that that action can be automatic, right? So the nice thing about Edge on Android or iOS is that you could have tabs open. This doesn't work right now in the preview, but eventually it will. You might have a web page that you're viewing, whatever it is. And you can just go over to the PC and open it up, and you can access those things just like you can today on, you know, Chrome, let's say, or whatever. And I think the point of bringing – well, there are a number of reasons to bring Edge to mobile. I mean, just the ability to sync bookmarks and passwords and form fill and whatever, cookies, whatever, is useful. They could probably have written a utility or a cloud service that would have done that behind the scenes to popular mobile browsers like Chrome and Safari, for sure. But I think that the act of continuing where you left off on a different device is particularly important on the web. And I think they wanted to have a more seamless experience for what's probably going to be the majority usage for this kind of thing. And by bringing their own app to iOS and Android, they can bypass the share screen ultimately, and you can just access that stuff automatically. And so just like, again, like you can in Chrome, there'll be some interface where you can go up and say, open the tabs in some other browser, and the other browser might be on mobile, not just on a Windows 10 PC. So it's useful, and it kind of ties into a wider ecosystem of Windows 10 to device integration. You know, there's going to be the Cloud Clipboard feature, the timeline feature, which actually ties into this, the What else is there? The I don't know. Cortana does this. Cortana will pop up.
Does it support the desktop plugins on the?
No, it doesn't support plugins. But it's in a preview right now, so it's kind of hard to say, you know, if that will happen or not. It supports right now. It's even, you know, it's only on iOS right now. It's only iPhone too, I should say. It's you can run it on an iPad, but it's just the iPhone app. I'm sure that will change. You know, I think this thing gets more sophisticated over time, but it has all the basic features. It has the edge look and feel, which I think is nice. It works well if you switch between portrait and landscape, and it kind of respects that kind of thing well. It has a reading view, so if you're reading an article, you can tap the icon and see it without all the distractions. Obviously, all the tab stuff, incognito mode. It syncs. I don't think it does passwords yet, but that's part of it, right? So in the preview period, they're going to get that other stuff going, like tab syncing and so forth. Is not there
to me,
right now.
Bookmarks and passwords and tabs really are more important to me than the continue on desktop feature.
Yeah, and by the way, to the average user, and by which I mean to all users, basically, also more important than like the rendering engine. You know, there's a lot
correct me if I'm wrong, but on the iPhone, they have to use WebKit. They can't.
That's right.
Does it use WebKit on Windows?
No, they have their own.
So they can't use the Edge engine on the iPhone anyway. So it's really a skin on basically any browser on the iPhone is really just Safari with a skin.
But they're also, it's interesting because they're also doing that on Android. And so they're not using WebKit on Android. They're using Blink or whatever. They're using the Chrome rendering engine.
Don't have to do that on Android, but that is
no, you don't.
A
but it's a good approach because it's the same app, right? That, you know, on both systems, it's going to be feature similar, feature identical.
It is on the desktop closer to Chrome, I think. I mean, wasn't that the whole point of that they said initially you could use Chrome plugins?
That's probably true. Yeah.
So I imagine it's the same. Blink is Google's engine.
But I think, again, most people, what they want is like, I have a database of passwords. I have a database of bookmarks.
Yeah. That's what matters.
And you can sync it on a one-time deal, I guess. But like, you know, the ability to just have that stuff work seamlessly over time is what you're really looking for. Yep. So I think they're doing the right thing.
So, you know, the other part about their launcher that we were talking about before. So, they have this Arrow launcher for Android. Now they are... I guess this replaces it, the Microsoft launcher that they talked about this past week. But the idea, again, here is they want launcher to be the best way for doing this continue on PC kind of feature. So they're making it so if you use the launcher on Android, and they can't do this on an iPhone because Apple isn't allowing that, but you could actually at some point like press and hold a photo on your phone and a photo will automatically open up on your Windows 10 PC.
Yeah. These capabilities, when you combine them all together, has caused, again, because we can't help ourselves in the Microsoft world, some enthusiasts to sort of wonder like, well, why does Microsoft sell a phone that is maybe, I don't know, a Galaxy S8 Plus or something that has the Microsoft launcher on it, that has the SwiftKey keyboard on it, that has the Microsoft lock screen, whatever it's called, that has, you know, all the continue on PC built in, that has all this stuff built in. You know, Microsoft Edge is the default browser and Cortana is the default assistant.
I think they're already doing this, right? They're selling it through other parties. Like, isn't there a Samsung phone already that they sell in the Microsoft store that has a lot of Microsoft apps populated?
That was the deal with Samsung. That's right.
Right. But, I saw people saying, so Microsoft should just build an Android phone. But why? Why would they do it, right? Like, what would Microsoft get out of building an Android phone?
Well, I guess the question to ask ourselves, because what's the, you know better than anybody, what's the Satya Nadella phrase about growth, growth mindset or whatever? You know, the Microsoft Lumia Android phone is not the next billion-dollar business for this company, right? I think it would be detrimental to Microsoft's mobile efforts if they had another failure in mobile hardware right now. I think that would be a mistake. So people who want to do this can do it. And people like Mary Jo and I who write about this stuff for a living can, you know, explain why you may or may not want to do that or how you might want to do that or whatever. Microsoft doing it themselves, I don't know. I will say, kind of tied to that thing we talked about earlier about the underlying rendering engine, the thing that's interesting there is, unlike on Windows, Microsoft can update Edge at any time because it's just a shell on top of something else that someone else is doing. And so Edge should take advantage of whatever whatever improvements happen to the underlying rendering engine over time, probably more frequently on Android than on iOS. But they really have to focus on is the app itself, and it's kind of freeing in a way when you think about it, right? You don't have to worry about matching or beating the other browsers from a performance perspective or from a, you know, whatever the things are, you know, that you look at in that space. I mean, they can just make a good app. And we know that the underlying rendering engines on those platforms are already pretty great. So there's no real worry there anymore.
Great. I think, though, I talked to Jill Belfiore about this whole idea and why they were doing it and all. And one of the last things he said to me during our call was, you know what we're doing? We're taking all the things that Windows Phone users loved and love, and we're bringing them to Android.
Well, like I said, I think conceptually that's true.
Right.
The problem is the pedantic world of tech enthusiasts, they are literally not doing that. And that is the problem, you know.
Exactly. They're taking that. A lot of people are saying, oh, so see what he's saying? He's saying they're going to make an Android phone. Yeah. No, he isn't saying that, actually. He's saying, you know, by customizing the Android screen with the Microsoft launcher, they are making something that has a lot of, not everything that, you know, Windows Phone had. I mean, there aren't live tiles on Android, right? But you are able to customize the home screen on the launcher in a lot of different ways. So they're kind of coming as close as they can to replicating the Windows Phone experience on Android without actually making an Android phone.
Here's some unsolicited advice for everybody. Instead of just Microsoft sizing your phone or whatever, why don't you independently evaluate various launchers, various keyboards, various home screens or lock screens, whatever, various personal digital assistants, and then make the right choice. You know, I think blindly picking some platform approach or some company approach or whatever is not necessarily the best idea. These things taken in isolation can be very useful. And so if you have decided that you want to use Edge on mobile, right, which some people will do. In fact, Microsoft thinks it's about, 330 million people, whatever the number is. It doesn't matter. Millions of people. Well, you know what? Having Edge on Android and iOS is great. And by the way, because you are using the underlying rendering engine, there's something you don't have to worry about. You know, if a page comes up in that browser, you know it's going to come up fine because it's running Safari or Chrome. It's going to be great. You know, so it's kind of a no-risk kind of a thing. If you use Edge for 2 months and it doesn't work out, guess what? Everything's fine.
All right.
Again, as long as it syncs my bookmarks,
yes,
I'm happy.
Right, and it does that. You have to sign in with a Microsoft account.
Yeah.
But it does do that.
I'm doing it right now. Actually, I'm putting the Arrow launcher on, which is actually pretty nice.
It is pretty nice.
I'm kind of impressed by it.
It's that is something it's worth spending time with because it's not just the basics of it. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff, and it's highly personalizable, highly configurable, I guess. there's a lot of personalization in there, and it's worth kind of stepping through each of the little screens and looking at the options because there's some neat stuff in there.
Yeah, it's got a frequently used, it's got the Bing wallpaper, which I like. It's got the frequently used app.
I love daily wallpaper switch, you know.
This is good.
Yeah, it is good.
But can I ask a question about a launcher? Because I tried the Arrow launcher when I first got my Android phone, and I don't understand why I would use it.
Like, that's sort of what I was getting at. Like, in other words, from the perspective of like a Microsoft fan, they're saying, "Well, I want this thing because Microsoft has promised me this is going to be a lot like Windows Phone, and this is what I want on my phone." And because you, as a normal person, like, I don't understand this. What's the difference?
No, because isn't it supposed to help you get access to your most frequently used apps? Yes.
Well, no? One of the things it can do is it can auto curate your home screen to display the apps you use the most.
So if you have to enable app usage monitoring, which I did, and now I can either slide up and see most used apps here. I don't have to do a lot of icon customization, or slide over and see most used apps right here.
Yeah.
I guess I don't have enough apps to make it.
Here are some of the ways in which you.
Well, but it also replaces the look and feel. So for instance, if you get a Samsung phone and you don't like, which most don't, Samsung's TouchWiz interface, you can completely customize. That's one of the real advantages of Android. I actually don't. I never use either Google's or Samsung's launcher. Yep. I use
some people just
want
to use the launcher. I think a lot of people's perspective, people complain about like the whack-a-mole interface on the iPhone, for example. It's a grid of icons, and it doesn't scale very well when you have hundreds and hundreds of apps. You know, most people just muscle memory where they want to go to hit the right app, and they go. And to them, the UI is nothing. It's about running the apps. They don't really care about that thing that's underneath. I mentioned the kind of people-centric approach they have. Like if depending on the way you think, depending on the way you do things, and if you think about it, Microsoft in some ways has been working on this stuff for like 20, 25 years now. You could approach your phone from the perspective of a communications device where it's not so much about the apps, it's about the people. And so you could say, well, I want to talk to Brad or Paul or Raphael or whatever, and I'm going to have their faces on my home screen, and that's how I think. Like, it makes sense to me that I want to tap on their face and call them, Skype them, you know, whatever it might be. It's just a different way of doing things. It supports different styles. I like Leo said, I think the primary strength of Android is that it's open, and by being open, it means that you can change anything, and that's – it helps Microsoft, but it also, you know, for a lot of people that use Android, that's actually kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
It's just making it yours. And the thing about Android users is, it's like Windows users to some degree.
I know.
Windows enthusiasts love to customize.
Yes.
I don't know if my experience is typical, but I noodle around a lot with different things. I've tried all the different keyboards. I've tried all the different assistants. I've tried all the different, you know, launchers. And I usually end up going back to the clean thing. Like, the default, it's like cars. You know, sometimes people buy a 30,000 vehicle and then spend $20,000 putting it up on lifts and adding under lighting and different stereos and stuff. And it's like, I just want the stock thing. You know, I like the thing for what it is. Maybe if it was a Samsung, I wouldn't actually. But, you know, like stock Android, I think it's clean and it works and I'm okay with it, you know. That's just me. But that's the beauty. Like, if that's not your deal, fine. You can change it.
Well, and the whole point of it, I think the Aero launcher would be, if you do want to kind of have a Microsoft ecosystem, it syncs to all of your Outlooks and, you know, your Microsoft account. So
I think Mary Jo kind of hinted at this notion that in the future especially – this might enable quicker interactions between the phone and the PC, right? That the continue on PC thing is a little kludgy right now. But if you use this launcher, maybe some of those actions going back and forth will be easier.
This is actually pretty impressive. The other issue is that if you use a third-party launcher, sometimes you're using launchers from some strange person you never you don't know who they are.
Yep. So, and they think about things differently than you do, and it might not make sense to you.
This is actually, this is not bad. I'm actually surprised.
Aero Launch has always been great. Like, the truth is, like, this was a garage product. The way that Belfiore described it in the blog post was that they promoted it. Like, this has come out of the garage. Like, this is now an officially supported Microsoft product. Like, Microsoft has put the full weight of the company behind it now. It's something they're going to do stuff with. It's not just two guys working on it in the back room somewhere.
I'm impressed.
Yeah.
It's got a Bing search bar at the top. So that's the other thing, you know, I mean.
Yeah, right.
By the way, you can change. Oh, no, that's Edge. I'm sorry. I'm not sure if you can change it.
You can't, right? I don't think you can.
In Edge, you can.
You can change
change the search engine in Edge on iOS to Google. Yeah.
You might be able to. I mean, Aero has a ton
Aero,
of
I don't remember. Aero,
in here.
Yeah. It's possible there's some Bing integration here that precludes that. But.
Okay.
It's got a lot.
Yeah, no, I was surprised by that, too. Someone asked, and I was like, there's no way. And then I went in, I'm like, oh, actually. Actually, you can change that.
Amazing.
Good for them.
There's a lot. I can't be sure.
But. Yeah, like I said, there's a lot in there. Like, it really is going to require some time and effort to kind of figure this thing out.
Yeah, this is good. It's got this utility page, which is very useful. You can customize that. It supports gestures. Swipe up to extend dock. Swipe down. Double tap my screen to lock. I mean... this is one of the reasons I like Android is this you know.
Yeah, it's impressive. I mean,
iPhone people go, why would you want to do any of that?
You know what? I'm going to give it another try. I'm going to give it another try and see if it does anything for
me. I mean, I think now that it's been kind of formalized, and of course, as part of this process, they updated it a lot too. It might be worth looking at again. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, we were both surprised, I think it's fair to say, that Microsoft did bring Edge to Android and iOS, because they've been asked this multiple times in different Q&As and all, and they're always like, you know what, Edge is a Windows thing. Yep. And then it was like, and surprise, here it is. You know, it's, again, it's not the full browser because it's not the rendering engine underneath, but
I don't think that's important. I
don't either. I agree with you. I don't think that is what people like. I don't think anybody's like, oh, it doesn't have the Edge HTML rendering engine.
I use Chrome on iOS, or I did, you know, because it synced all that stuff over. And that was what was important to me. The Safari rendering engine's excellent. I don't care about that. Like, it's just working. It's fine.
Yeah. Oh, and one other thing that Joe Belfiore said to me, I said to him, so, you know, now that you're doing a lot of new things with Edge, are you ever going to bring Edge to the Windows Store and make it a separately updatable app for Windows? And he said, we are looking at that still, and we have not ruled that out yet.
I wonder what the holdup is there. It seems so obvious. I know. Because the app itself needs to be updated. Right?
I know.
The rendering engine stuff, you know, whatever, that can be twice a year. It could be once a year. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. I don't know why. I think he said something to me like, we're trying to figure out how and if we can bring it to the store. So there's still, you know, I think we had said before on the show that they had ruled that out completely and we're not going to do it. But he said, no, we're still considering it. And they know that they need to be updating Edge on Windows more than, you know, twice a year, which is how.
Yeah, right. That, and that's the central issue. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So, yeah. Joe has just been a fountain of information lately.
I love it. Keep up the good work, JB.
Period of silence.
Yeah. Is his hair, what color is it these days?
Yeah, really.
Is it black?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe like partially blonde. Isn't he back to that again?
If the word frosted is going to enter into this conversation, I'm going to be really disappointed.
Just the tips, man. Just the tips.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a little break. When we come back, more about Windows 10. 1709, a.k.a. the FCU. That is not good. We will not call it the FCU.
No, we will not.
Sure. We'll find something family-friendly for that.
And
yeah.
That's not unfriendly. It's just, I don't know.
It's not the best.
Yeah, yeah. Our show today brought to you by The Best, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country, and for good reason. In fact, today's Blue Apron Day in the LaPorte House. I always look forward to the box. The box comes with three meals, everything I need to make three meals, all the ingredients, fresh, delicious, even the fish and the meat are never frozen, refrigerated box, amazing. I don't know how they get the quality of the produce so high, but it's always perfect, better than I probably would have picked in the store. And that's always fun. And you get ingredients you've never tried before. You get add recipes to your repertoire, which is really fun. And I think there is something about cooking from scratch. The thing is, this makes cooking from scratch as easy as possible. No shopping, no prep. It's ready to go 40 minutes or less. And the house fills with a beautiful aroma. And we just did the catfish sandwiches. Those were so good. I don't know what we're getting this week. You get to choose, by the way. Just go to the menu. There are two Blue Apron plans. There's a plan for couples and a family plan. Sugar and brown butter chicken with roasted fall vegetables. That sounds so good. Yeah, we just had the Cajun spiced catfish sandwiches. Really delicious. Kind of a po' boy, I guess, is what I guess I made a po' boy. Fennel-crusted pork chops and fig compote with sautéed kale and farro salad. Thanks to Blue Apron, I know Mary Jo knows farro, but this is the first time I'd ever tried farro, and I now am a farro fan. Farro fan. In fact, that's another great thing about it. I always get new and interesting stuff. Vegetarian choices for a variety of dietary needs, of course. Here's the vegetarian meal. Broccoli risotto and soft-boiled eggs with pistachio and grana padano cheese. Oh, I love it. So you get the recipe card. It walks you through the process. You do not have to have no prior experience necessary. By the way, they're celebrating. This is their fifth anniversary. They've been around for 5 years, and they're doing it by bringing back the top 20 all-time most favorite recipes, none of which I've tried. I can't wait. Right now, all your favorites back on the menu for a limited time only. Less than $10 a person. It's less than you'd spend in a grocery store. but it's fabulous. And there's never any wastage. Actually, with the two-person plan, we feed Michael as well. We really get three meals out of it. Blue Apron's created partnerships with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranches across the United States. So the meat is from responsibly raised animals. The seafood is sourced sustainably. The produce comes from farms that practice regenerative farming. And they ship the exact amount you need, so you'll never have too much. Less food waste. I love it. Can't wait to go home and cook tonight. BlueApron.com/windows. Get $30 off your first delivery with free shipping. And don't forget, 5th anniversary means some really fun recipes. All-time customer favorite recipes and $30 off your first delivery. Going to BlueApron.com/windows. BlueApron.com/windows. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley in the beautiful confines of the City University of New York J School.
The Pennsylvania State Penitentiary for the criminally insane.
Do you, when you go back to a college, do you have the same experience I do, which is, I am so glad I'm not in college anymore.
Yes.
It's fun to be able to read what you want, write what you want, you know, live as you want. I loved college. I loved it. Nothing wrong with it, but you know. It was a sense of freedom when it stopped.
Right? I feel like walking into the commons and just being like, so what are you guys doing? You're exchanging ideas.
Yeah, what's up?
What's up, kid?
Hey. It'd be like that. What was that movie where the guys started the frat to go back to school? Back to School, I think was the name. Yes.
No. It was the...
what was it?
You're My Boy Blue. What was that?
That's all right. I didn't mean to hurt your brain.
Back to School is the Rodney Dangerfield movie.
Oh, that was a good one. I like that one. That was fun.
What is the name
Old
of that?
School.
Old School. Thank you.
Chat room always knows. Yeah. Always. So, the FCU is finally due.
Yes, it is.
I feel like we've been saying this every week for six weeks.
I know. We have.
Has Donna Sakar weighed in yet?
No, but Brandon LeBlanc weighed in this week.
That's as close as we're going to get.
I know. Right. So it's funny. Somebody asked Brandon LeBlanc on Twitter, Brandon, is build 16299.15 RTM, as in release to MJF? And he said in one word, yes.
Oh, I love it. Release to MJF.
Now, before I get off on a rant, I just want to point out that Mary Jo has foolishly forgotten to bring her gong to this. So
I did.
Oh, you can rant. You can rant all you want.
There is a commonality to the two major stories we've discussed so far today. And what is that commonality? Microsoft announcing something important to an individual on Twitter, not to the world, via a press release, a blog post, some other public event of some kind. That literally in response to one human being. One human being from Microsoft has revealed the thing we want to know.
That's the way the world is now, man.
Listen, you talk old school. You said sorry, but this is not acceptable. I
you're just jealous.
No. I you know, Leo. I see clarity in all things. Like announcing or revealing things like this to an individual on Twitter is like, you know. Spitting into the wind, like that doesn't do it.
Well, even in what's funny as an at reply, which makes it even less visible, right?
Oh, that's just terrible.
The only people who see it are people who follow both of you.
Right. And the only reason I saw it was somebody tweeted to me, hey, did you see that he said this?
But I guess they figure, well, Mary Jo will put the word out.
Yeah.
That's a fine strategy. You know, ping Mary Jo and let her know that this happened.
Send her a press release.
Yeah.
Something. You just want
it. Doesn't have to be like a fax. It could come electronically. Yeah. I'm not trying to be completely old fashioned. I think it should be something official.
No, it should be a fax.
Paul Thurrott. Yeah, only it
should,
Paul.
Okay. It should be on company letterhead, obviously.
This is the world we live in, Paul. I agree with you. I bemoan it, but it is the world we live in.
I don't like it.
I don't like it one bit.
You know, the CUNY School of Journalism is with me, Leo. They know.
Oh, they know.
It's not the right way to do
they
things.
Know
but
the
you
difference.
Know what? We have to encourage this new openness on Microsoft's
That's
part.
A good
They're
point.
Starting small.
There you go.
They're yeah. starting small, but like it's better than just not saying anything.
They said something. It's true.
If you release the source code to Linux to one person on Twitter, did you release the source code to
no.
Linux? Or
no,
you
that's
just
a good point. That's an excellent point. Yeah.
I don't know.
No, that's an excellent point.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I know.
There was no other official announcement?
No.
Just that one tweet.
Yeah.
Right.
Which Mary Jo wouldn't have even seen because she's wise enough not to read
understand.
It.
The rest of us have become like tea leaf readers or whatever. Like,
right.
You know, we know, for example, that when they first released this bill to the fast ring and then immediately released it to the slow ring, oh, something might be up here.
Right.
And yesterday or 2 days ago, whatever it was, they released this bill to the release preview ring. Now, that's the final – to me, that is the final confirmation, really, because you don't put something into the release preview ring unless you are literally going to release it to the public. That's what that ring is
right.
for. So this is it. I mean, there's no doubt. We've been kind of saying that for a week or two now, but
yeah.
I think – I would say this confirms it.
So
well,
this is 16299.15.
Of course. Right. What else would you use for the final
AKA 1709.
All right. Well, and then Donna Sarkar just tweeted today, no new builds today, Windows Insiders, but check your ring settings because the next one will be Redstone 4. So that also tells you we're done.
Right. They're moving on. They're going away. Yep. They're going to the next version.
I also have a tip, I think, related to this very topic. So let's not speak too much on that subject right now. But
right.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, that's,
but you're right.
That's Donna saying, hey,
yep.
The time has come.
Yes.
All right. So it's happening.
Yep.
It's happening. Next week, in fact, October 17th is when it starts rolling out. They've already said that. So, you know, what we're expecting will happen is you'll get the these final bits. If you know, I think, again, a staged rollout. Some people will get them first. Then there also probably will be at least one cumulative update right away once you get the final bits. Because they have been continuing to do fixes and make improvements to the Fall Creators Update, even after they declared this particular build as done, right?
Yeah, yeah. I got to tell you, you know, I've complained a lot about the frequent updating on Windows 10, but the one thing I'm actually behind, and I have no problem with, is this notion that they kind of freeze the build at the build number we know. But like she said, you know, we're going to get a cumulative update on day one, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that's absolutely fine. Because the truth is, if you installed it on October 17th or if you waited until next June 17th or whatever date in between, it does not matter. You will also install a cumulative update every single time. And that's it's absolutely fine. It's fine.
Right. It's okay.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
It's not like the Windows Phone thing. It's okay.
Yeah, we've been talking about this for so long. I feel like there's nothing to say except that. Well, get ready.
I know.
Is there anything
every
to worry
week.
About?
Oh,
is it stable? Is it? I mean, there's nothing to say really.
Well, it wasn't this. I think it was this particular build 16299 that had a bug in it that made Windows Media Player disappear from some people's builds.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
We'll hear
so
about that
yesterday,
one, won't we?
No, yesterday I saw an
Leo.
Article on Forbes. Friends don't let friends read Forbes, remember? And they said, oh, this is it. Microsoft, first they killed Groove Music Pass, and now they're killing Windows Media Player. And so I went to Microsoft, and I'm like, wait, are you killing Windows Media Player? And they said, no, that was a bug in the Insider build.
This was the exact line, I believe, from the Forbes article, which was, you can pry Windows Media Player from my cold, dead fingers.
Oh, Lord.
To which I replied, you know, good for you, Hotshot. Like, nobody cares about this software. Like, nobody. Nobody cared about it when it was new. Like, it's – I seriously, it's like missing QuickTime or something. Like, seriously. Like, this is not a beloved thing. It's
well,
in there for legacy reasons.
Don't you need
it? Yeah, you need the – it's in there. It's not going away. They can't get rid of it. They want to, I'm sure. It's terrible. But
what do you
there
use?
Was nothing.
So you use the Groove Music Player? What do you use to play?
Well, there's a movies and TV app that plays videos, which is actually, by the way, quite good.
Is that the default launch? Or
yes.
Not Windows. Oh, so this is really, you're right.
You have to try hard to use Windows Media Player.
Yeah,
you can do
it.
It's in there. It's like Internet Explorer. You can go find it if you want.
Okay.
But you don't need it.
I don't know because I probably just always install VLC and just let it handle everything.
Yeah, of course.
Like an insane person.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I mean, so actually movies and TV is a lot like Microsoft Edge in the sense that A, nobody uses it, but B, you kind of do want to use it if you can, especially when you're on battery power, because those apps actually provide much better battery power for what they do respectively. So if you care about battery power a lot, browse the web with Edge. That's going to give you much better battery life than Chrome or whatever. Well, Chrome, I guess. When it comes to playing movies, like you're right, VLC is a much better video player in the sense that it has better features and so forth. But actually, if you care, you know, you want to make it across the country, across the ocean, whatever it is, and watch movies. If you can play that thing in movies and TV, you should do it because you're actually going to get much better battery life when you do that.
All right.
Yeah.
That's a good tip.
Yep.
Oh, there it is. Windows Media Player. Welcome. Yeah, I've never apparently never used it.
Another thing for faux outrage in the Windows community. Yeah. Great.
Oh, they're killing it now.
Every once in a while, it opens. When I do something and it opens, I'm like, oh, yeah, Windows Media Player.
Oh, yeah. It's unbelievable. That's terrible stuff.
So if I – okay, good. So if I just turn on – if I try to launch music or video, it won't launch.
It will never launch this software. Mm-hmm. I mean, there may be some esoteric video format that is only – you know, for some reason is tied to Windows Media Player, but I doubt it. You could right-click a video and say open with and then Windows Media
Player. Yeah, you'd see it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can also not have it on. You can uninstall it. Like, you can go into the Windows Features control panel and remove it, I believe. Like, you
probably
don't need to have the
app. It's got codecs and things, right? That's what's...
Yeah, but I think those things stay on the system if you remove the app. You can probably just get rid of the app.
Yeah.
There's no reason to it. Like, you never really run into it.
Yeah,
it's
when
not
I launch music, Groove Music launches when I try to play music. And I don't have any videos on here, so I don't know. But, okay. Okay. This is a pretty clean machine. I only use it for work. This Surface.
Well, if you would upgrade it all the way from Windows 95, you'd still have that cute little skiing video.
I know. Weezer. I'd have Weezer on here.
Probably like it was probably a Move file or something, too.
Yeah,
I don't even remember.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Or no, it was an AVI, like any sensible.
Oh, AVI. Yeah. It was like a 320 by 240 AVI.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Like up an entire CD or something.
What's this about? Price increases for Windows downgrades. That makes sense. I don't get that. What's that?
Okay. Was that me?
No, that was me. Sorry.
Right. So there are two things happening on the pricing front that mostly affect small and mid-sized business customers more than anyone else. And they have to do with what Microsoft's going to do around pricing when the Fall Creators update comes out. The first thing that's going on is Microsoft is adding a new edition of Windows 10 to its lineup that's called Windows 10 Pro for Workstations.
But that will be inexpensive.
It's not that inexpensive. But here's the thing. Here's the reason this story is a little bit hard to explain. What I found out from my contacts is pricing that Microsoft is charging OEMs for these versions of Windows 10. And OEMs have the option of passing those costs on to customers or not. They can pass them on, you know, as and make it as expensive as they want to recoup their costs or not.
I wonder which they'll choose.
You know, sometimes they don't choose what you think they do because they want to compete against other products that are in the market. So I've seen a price list for what Microsoft is planning to charge for some of these additions. And Windows 10 Pro for workstations for up to four cores, Microsoft is charging OEMs $144 per copy.
Oh, that's not that bad, actually.
But compare that to Windows 10 Pro standard, that's $117.
Yeah.
So it's $30 more for Windows 10 Pro for workstations over what they are charging for standard.
But they flipped a registry switch for you. I don't understand why you don't think it's worth that extra.
Right.
Extra bit of money.
Well, the way I found out about this is interesting. So OEMs are out there warning some customers about this price increase. And they're saying to them, hey, by the way, Microsoft's just about to introduce this Windows 10 for workstations thing. And so you guys who've been running Windows 10 Pro on, you know, higher class hardware, you may end up paying this price differential. And it could be quite a bit because what Microsoft's going to do is start charging per core, I believe, for Xeon and Opteron processors. So I've had a couple of people say to me, all right, I already have a machine with a Xeon processor. What's going to happen to me when Fall Creators update comes out? Am I suddenly going to be charged?
That's an awesome question.
More? And I said, I don't know, but I would think you are going to. That would be my guess.
So the thing is, though, that person today would be running Windows 10 Pro.
Correct.
So Windows 10 Pro is not limited in any way as to its support for the processor cores that are in that system, right? They're taking full advantage of that system today. Are they downgrading the capabilities of Windows 10 Pro so that that is no longer the case?
Yes. Resilient file system, ReFS isn't going to be available. Creation of ReFS files is a Windows 10 Pro for workstations only feature from now on. So if you're somebody who uses ReFS, you are going to need the workstation version, and you won't be able to use Pro.
Wow. Okay.
Right.
Well, okay, but I could be wrong about this, but I believe ReFS is only for creation capabilities. So if the disk is already there, you should be okay. What you will lose is the ability to create new volumes
create
of that
new
file system, I think.
Yes, I think you're right too.
But what about the processor? Are you saying that I don't actually understand. Is there...
Yeah. That I don't understand either. Microsoft's not talking about this pricing. I mean, this is confidential information. They're like, hey, OEMs aren't supposed to be talking about this.
I mean, can you imagine getting a bill for $170, whatever it is, as part of setup?
I know.
You know?
I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah, would they literally, kind of down-tune the system so that it didn't take full advantage of the chip? That would be crazy.
Yeah.
This is why people use Linux. This is also why we don't get nice things.
It sound a little hostile, frankly.
It really does. Yeah. I mean, there probably isn't too big of an audience here.
Yeah,
you know.
So why do it?
I know.
Right, why do it?
Yeah.
Well, because does it work for them to keep it working with these processors? I mean, I'm hoping to find some real good reason for this.
Yeah. I think the reason is they want more money. I think
that's a good reason. They are,
Okay, so it wasn't anything particularly witty. They just wanted to get more money.
No, I mean, that's me giving my interpretation of this. Okay,
That's only half of the story. What's the...
That is only half of the story. Okay, so there is also, for people who do not have volume licenses, who buy Windows 10 Pro right now, if you want to downgrade to Windows 7, you only can do that if you have rights passed on to you through your OEM. You know, if you have a volume license, you can downgrade from Windows 10 to anything you want, right?
It's like the inheritor tax differs from state to state, so you have to check with your local authorities.
Right. So if you're a small or mid-sized business and you don't have a volume license, you are going to care about this because there's this addition called Windows 10 Pro Standard with downgrade rights. And Microsoft charges OEMs for this because they're trying not to let OEMs sell this, right? They don't want them to sell you this. So they're going to make that more expensive for the OEMs to try to discourage people from downgrading from Windows 10 to Windows 7 or 8.1. So the price of Windows 10 Standard with downgrade rights, which some people want for work machines so that they can go back to Windows 7, is going to jump by $30 also, from $135 to $165. So if you're a business and you want to downgrade from Windows 10 and you don't have a volume license, you're going to have to pay $30 more to do that, it looks like, starting November 1st.
I spend entire days just muttering and walking around the house, shaking my head because of stuff like this.
I know. These are hard things to explain. This is why, you know, there are companies like Directions on Microsoft and people who do enterprise licensing as a whole business, because this is really hard to explain and parse. But the bottom line is Microsoft is increasing the prices that it's charging OEMs for at least those two editions of Windows 10.
And the reason they're doing it is because they want more money.
I believe so.
That's not the official reason.
I would give anything to see that on a FAQ.
Yeah.
But why are you increasing the price on the downgrade rates? Well, we are doing it because we want more money.
Shareholder value.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it is shareholder value, right? Because they're looking for ways to monetize Windows and to get fewer people to stay on Windows 7 and go to 10. So, yes.
Shareholder value is, in this country, that's okay. That's our religion.
Great.
Shareholder value.
So, again, I don't know if they're going to talk about any of this. Probably not, because this is kind of, you know, prices to OEMs, not something you're supposed to talk about if you're
Maybe this is why Panos Panay is going to London soon.
Probably shareholder value?
I think it's called Future Decoded, isn't
that
it?
That guy in a plane. That's the new strategy.
Let's see. So we are, as you said, going to be getting Redstone 4 soon.
Yep.
And people are starting to look at it. And there's something hidden in there.
Yeah, Raphael found, as he does so often, a feature that Microsoft had previously disclosed, originally scheduled for the Fall Creators Update, but now for the spring update or the RS4 release, called, I think it's called Cloud Clipboard or something similar to that. And the notion here, again, is that when you do a copy-paste, instead of it being relegated just to that one device and there only being like one slot for something to copy, it will work across devices, you know, part of that cross-mobile devices scheme that Microsoft is working on. So the fact that it's in an RS4 build already hidden suggests very strongly they intend to release that as part of RS4. There are some other features Microsoft had announced. Remember back at build in May, I think it was, Timeline, which came up, I think, before the show today. What else? Is there other stuff? I feel like there's other stuff.
Cloud Clipboard, Timeline. Pick up where you left off.
Yeah.
I'll let you know that.
Yeah. So it looks like we had all kind of expected to see this happen in time for the fall. It's not obviously not going to happen unless they miraculously deliver half of it overnight. But it is probably going to be an RS4. And so the fact that it's in there, it's kind of like My People. When Microsoft took My People out of RS2, Raphael looked at an early build of RS3, which is the Fall Creators Update, and said, hey, actually, it's back. So that was an indication they were getting ready to make it happen for testers first and then the general populace, and they did. And so I think we can say they'll probably do that again with Cloud Clipboard unless something horrible happens, I suppose.
We got yesterday, Patch Tuesday came in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing on NeoWin, I don't know how widespread this is, that some people are reporting BSODs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can actually make this my enterprise tip if you guys would
save it.
And explain this more. Yep.
So there's an explanation.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It involves DEFCON levels.
I see. You're right. I should have looked at the notes ahead of time.
Well, I just added it because I was thinking, I should talk about this because it's kind of big deal.
Okay. Yep. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to tell you all about why Microsoft is killing Surface in 2019. And this will not die,
right,
will
up.
It? This
thing more
will
good
not
news
die.
For the Windows enthusiast.
I don't,
after the break,
this will not die, despite many denials across the board.
Yep.
Our show today brought to you by Casper. Oh, I got the new Casper mattress. By the way, I opened it last night. We got a video. I don't know if it's on the. I don't think it's on our system yet, but I'll put it up soon. Casper is, as you probably know if you listen to our shows by now, it's an online retailer of premium, really top flight, very good, state-of-the-art mattresses, comparable to the, you know, the $8,000 mattress you'd buy in a mattress store. But because they sell directly to you, they sell over the internet, they take out this really predatory pricing that you get in mattress stores, and it's very affordable, a fraction of the cost at a mattress store, but just as good. They're revolutionizing the mattress industry by just eliminating resellers and showrooms and just selling directly to you. Now, I have the original Casper mattress. It's made of supportive memory foams. It gives you a sleep surface that magically, and it feels like magic, gives you just the right sink. It's soft, but it's firm. It's soft and firm. I don't know how to describe that. Just the right bounce. It's breathable, which is very nice. You don't ever want to be hot at night. And a cool mattress, and a lot of these other mattresses, it's like a blanket on top of you and below you. You don't want that. Casper mattress also smells great. There's no period of airing it out. It's just fabulous. Long-lasting comfort and support. Now, I know what the catch is, and I know why you're going to say, but Leo. I know where the but Leo comes from. How can I buy this mattress if I can't lie on it first? They understand you really want to try it out, but truthfully, trying it out in a store is not the way to try out a mattress. Try it out in your home. And that's how it works. Casper offers free delivery, painless returns, and a 100-day trial period. So you try it for, or I should say 100 nights, right? Sleep on it for 100 nights. And if in night 99 you say, well, I gave it a three-month shot, but I don't like it, they'll come, they'll take it, they'll refund you every penny. This is so much better than lying on a bed in a showroom, but I understand it requires a little bit of a leap of faith. So that's why I always tell you, that's I sleep on it. I love it. They just introduced the Casper Wave mattress. It's a even a little bit higher level, but still so much less than the top-of-the-line mattresses. I opened it up yesterday. What I love about the Casper mattress is they come in very compact boxes. Because they have some magic machine. I'd love to see this machine. It takes all the air out of it. And then you open it up, and it goes, and it fills up. And so it goes from being a very tiny little thing into a full-size mattress. We got a California King. And it's amazing. Wait till I show you the video. It goes, and it's suddenly a full-size King. They call it natural geometry support system. It's got a new top layer. It is the most comfortable. It's so comfortable. Casper mattresses uphold the highest environmental production standards. They're made in the USA. Get a Casper mattress. You're going to save $50 towards your mattress purchase if you go to casper.com/windows, letting them know you saw it right here. casper.com/windows. And do use the promo code windows to get that $50 off. Some terms and conditions apply. It's a miracle. And really, a lot of the reasons this works, like many of our direct-to-you sponsors, is it eliminates that middleman. And in the mattress business, those showrooms, they have a big markup. Casper.com/windows. Well, as long as you're getting rid of the Windows phone, why don't we just dump Surface entirely, huh? Let's just get rid of the whole... You can understand why people are thinking that.
No, I can't.
No? Why are they thinking that? Was this just a rumor? Where did this come from?
It's worse than a rumor. It's like one guy using his psychological evaluation of Satya Nadella.
Why they should get
on stage at his own company's event, said, I believe that this guy will kill this product line, and I think it's going to happen in 2019. And then, with the incredulous audience questioning this, they turn to some guy from Lenovo. This is in Europe, by the way, where all of the top executives of the PC maker work. And he said, hey, do you think that could happen? And the guy said, yeah, I think that could happen.
He wishes it would happen.
Yeah, he does, actually, because Lenovo's the one PC maker that has never forgiven Microsoft for Surface. And they asked for a guy from Dell, and that guy was noncommittal, but we're going to throw him in the pro column because we're trying to build a case here that this is going to happen. And that was the entire story. That was all of the rationale.
Forget it.
There was no insider information, no channel information, no nothing. It was just complete baloney. Oh. So I wrote that this was fake news. And, Microsoft is Microsoft. I mean, they could cancel Surface at any time, I guess, but it is a billion-dollar business. I don't really see them doing it. It's successful. I don't see the rationale for it, personally.
All right.
But Microsoft did finally come out, sort of, and say that they were not killing
Surface. Pat Hospinay said it's a tabloid rumor of the week. So far from the truth.
Yeah, and at least he didn't say it on Twitter. So,
and I could see Panos. I mean, Panos is the guy who brings these things out and goes, "We put our love and heart and soul into this. The greatest thing ever." I mean, he really means it too. Yep. And he would be insulted by that, wouldn't he?
So, yeah, and Panos is going to be on stage in London when I don't remember the date, but soon,
the very end of October. Yeah.
Yeah. So, assuming that's the next time he appears live, I sort of expect him to kind of address this, maybe even jokingly. But yeah, so far. Anyway, he hasn't come out.
He hasn't really. You know, Microsoft is the way they often respond to rumors like this is they just don't respond.
Yeah, which I don't like, by the way.
Yeah,
I feel like you need to address this stuff. You know, the Consumer Reports thing, they kind of came out publicly and were like, look, there's the deal. And they didn't really have much of a response to the reliability stuff other than to say we feel like it's gotten better since the new products have come out, which, you know, could or could not be true. We don't really know. But and then they used the customer service data, which is absolutely true. Right? I mean, the customers who stick with Surface love Surface. I mean, I've had so many problems with my Surface Book. It's still probably my favorite laptop of all time. Like, I still love the thing, even though, you know, I did have issues with it.
All right. So, okay. So that was just bogus.
Yep.
And Yeah, I can understand why they wouldn't want to dignify it. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
But the problem is it was reported everywhere. Yeah. And you know how the web works these days. It's not like report colon or idiot analyst colon. It's Microsoft will cancel Surface. And oh, by the way, we know the exact date for some reason. It's amazing.
Yeah. You know, if this hadn't happened right after the Windows Phone being killed and the Groove Music Pass being killed, I think it would have had less believability. I think people were just like, oh, and what else are they going to kill? Oh, yeah. Okay. Why not?
What's next? Right? Windows? They kill Windows, Jerick. The last thing I care about.
Yeah.
Well, and by all reports, they're making money on Surface, right?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. Well, we don't know how much money they're losing, right? We don't know if it's a... Right.
By which we mean, yes, they're making money.
They're making money because they're not losing as much money as you thought.
Right. But, no, do we know if Surface is profitable?
No, we don't.
No.
That's true.
We know they're selling... We know it's an around $1 billion a quarter business, right? But we don't know how much they're spending to make the billion.
That is fair.
So, yeah.
Why don't they have to report that?
Leo, I asked myself...
To an investor, isn't that material?
I think so. I think so. I don't understand how they can be so vague. It's not even... vague is the wrong word. If they were
it's
consistently...
Not just that. Apple does that too. I mean, I don't understand why... aren't you
Apple
supposed
says
to tell investors what's going on? I mean, isn't that the whole point of...
public company? Yeah, you would think so. I thought so. But of course, I'm naive when it comes to this stuff. But Mary Josna, I complain every single quarter. We have a conversation where we're both scanning the same documents just as they're released for the quarter results, she probably has her spine tingling because she knows I'm about to ping her and be like, why the hell have they not provided? Because if you look at like 8 quarters in a row, 5 of them, they will have mentioned some Office 365 commercial, active users per month. 3 of them, they don't. And it makes it impossible to do year over year, month over, quarter.
We got to get some financial. I got to talk to somebody because
it's crazy.
I'm like you, Paul. I'm simplistic about this. Well, I'm not completely simplistic, but I kind of understand how this works.
Simple
when you're
is best.
A public company, you ask people to invest in you. In order to do that, certainly before you go public, you go around and you tell people all the material information. They look at your balance sheets, all this stuff, to see if you're a good investment. And then you continue as a public company to do quarterly reports, to do an annual report, to do calls to explain why your company may or may not do it well. And you would think this is very material to an investor.
They are literally tailoring the information they provide to for it to be as positive as possible rather than for it to be as realistic or real world or whatever you want to say as possible.
It's not a PR thing. This is so investors can decide whether your stock is worth buying.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. This is exactly my complaint.
Every company does it, number one. Number two.
I don't understand why they get away with it.
I know. And, Steve Ballmer, who happens to be the biggest shareholder in Microsoft, has said multiple times, like, I can't believe Microsoft doesn't even disclose what percentage of their cloud business is Azure.
Right.
They don't.
Well, excuse me, but I know Steve Ballmer knows. That's the
he
point.
He wants to know.
Oh, he knows. Know. You think he doesn't know? You think they don't tell him?
I think
him?
He doesn't know. Yeah, I don't think he knows because
he
said
this publicly. I'd be pissed. I'd go to the shareholders meeting and say, "Damn it, you need to tell us this. This is material to whether we invest in you. Whether my Ballmer's got a lot of money invested in my
dishonest. It's dishonest, and if it isn't, it should be illegal. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, and you know what Microsoft has done is they've rejiggered regularly how they report their financials. They've put more and more things together in buckets that make it impossible to pull these things out. Right, so. Like things are reported together that you're kind of like, huh, why are those things being reported together?
I'm sure just as it is with the tax laws, they go right up to the edge of what they can legally get away
they
with. They have a building full of lawyers, so they know exactly how to parse it. I'm sure it's legal, but my question is it's not legal.
I know. And the one part we did know how it was doing because they wanted people to see why they were getting out of the business was Windows Phone. They kept reporting how much money they were losing every quarter on Windows Phone.
That was really transparent. It's almost like people shouldn't have been surprised.
I know.
You know, because they did this for 2 years straight.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, we can complain all we want, but I don't think it's going to change. They seem to know how to do this.
Well, I feel like Congress has other things, other fish to fry that are probably
they have some bigger things going on.
It does seem odd, and it's one of the reasons I don't buy stocks.
Yeah, listen, I complain. I complain about this every quarter, every single quarter. It's like it's an automatic thing because the information they disclose is so slapdash and so nonsensical, it makes me crazy every time.
I would use another word. I would use the word self-serving.
It's it should be illegal. It is cherry picking facts. That's what totalitarian governments do. This should be illegal. Owned company.
I'm not a Microsoft shareholder, but if I were, I would. I don't. Why aren't you guys demanding this information?
Yes.
Shouldn't you? That's fair. Yeah. Why isn't Ballmer? Why I feel like Ballmer must know. Of course, if Ballmer knew, then that would really be an uneven playing field because some insiders would know.
You're such an idiot. You don't know anything about finances and you don't know anything about investing and you don't, you know. And yeah, okay, fair enough.
I'm just a little bit about it.
Pennsylvania farmer boy. Saying is.
Mr. Emmaus.
Mr. Emmaus. I like that.
Or as Cena called me yesterday, Mr. Man. Think you know everything, Mr. Man?
What's that county? What's that county you live in?
Lehigh Valley.
Upper Macungie Valley.
No, it's not.
The Lower Macungie Valley.
Truth is, Leo, I still have no idea where I live. All of those names are roughly accurate. I don't know. It's kind of over the river and through the woods, literally. I don't know.
It feels like it is taking advantage of investors, but you know, after all, aren't the laws in this country written to benefit companies, not investors? So,
well, they're people, Leo. They deserve rights.
I think they do. I think they do. They deserve rights.
Oh boy, they deserve the right to tell us the truth.
Yeah. All right. I'm sorry. You need a gong, Mary Jo, but now it's me and Paul.
I kind of needed one. I was just sitting here thinking, wow, I wish I had my gong right now.
I have never loved you more than I do right now, Leo. I couldn't agree with you more.
One thing about the Aero launcher, front and center, it's got a nice big Cortana button.
Does it have a Microsoft stock quote thing right there?
Yeah,
in the middle
they should have a little stock ticker going across. How much money we're making on Surface right here. Look at that.
Yep.
Can't tell you that.
Surface growth was double that it was 3 months ago.
If we only knew. Yeah. If we only knew, we'd tell you. Let me see. Hey, Cortana. How much money does Microsoft... What's happening? What's happening?
I don't know. Something just started auto-playing in my browser.
Oh, there's another...
She had a horrified look on her face
I was like, what's happening? I even have a blocker for that auto-play
thing. Take some of the paper towels out of the thing you're using to hold up your webcam and clean your eyes there. You okay?
Yeah. Like, geez. Wow. Sorry. Sorry.
I didn't hear it. We didn't hear it. Only you heard it.
I was like, oh.
What is Invoke? Is that an event? Is that a thing? What is it? What is the, is that the Harman Kardon speaker?
It is. Yeah.
Third guess.
Yep. You are correct.
It's pretty good, actually.
Yeah. So Harman Kardon is making a Cortana speaker. We knew that. We knew it's coming out this fall. We didn't know a lot of other things about it, but we now know many things because Microsoft accidentally published to their own store website everything about the Invoke.
And
now they've removed it. Now they've removed all this information, but we found out a lot of good things. We found out that it's going to cost $199.95, I believe. At least that's what it looks like it's going to cost, right?
That's what the page said.
That's what the page said.
But it comes in two fun colors.
I know. We didn't know that, right? We knew it was going to come in black, which they're calling graphite, and it's also coming in pearl silver.
Or call it gray. Yep.
Yeah, gray or silver, maybe.
Black and white. Okay, good.
Right.
Yeah. Stunning new colors.
Right. We also know that it is going to be out apparently on October 22nd because that was on the page also. And we know it weighs 2.3 pounds. We know a lot of things now.
Some very specific details. We know it takes a 220 watt or 20.
So how long before Microsoft kills this business?
Yep.
Because I tell you what, they're going into a buzzsaw here. They now.
Yeah, they are.
It's funny that you said that because Brad, the day this happened, he tweeted. He says, "I think Harman Kardon had confirmed to him that they will release a speaker on October 22nd." And my response to him was, "Did they tell you when they're just going to discontinue it?"
We had the same reaction.
Yeah,
not only are you going against the incumbent Amazon, which is everywhere and has form factors for any conceivable crevice. And then of course Google has now launched its Google Home Mini, Midi, and Maxi.
The Invoke has one major advantage over these other products.
What is that?
It's more expensive.
No, actually, $200 is kind of right in the middle of all of this, right?
Yeah.
No, but for the type of thing it is, this goes against.
You can get that Google Donut or the Amazon Dot for like $40. So. You're right.
But if you want to compare it to a mainstream Google Home, it's $129, I think. The Amazon Echo was actually more expensive. I think it was about $179 for a while, but I believe it's less expensive than that today. Anyway, it's more expensive than both of them, so smart.
And you know what I was most surprised about wasn't the price, though. I was wondering if they were going to position this as a business device because – when they did their recent partnership with Amazon around Alexa and Cortana being able to collaborate, they both made a big deal out of the fact that Cortana is better at handling your business kinds of activities, like knowing your business calendar, accessing your LinkedIn contacts, and all that. So I thought, maybe they're going to position this as a business device. They're not. They're going like head to head with the Echo.
The problem I have with this is that it provides Microsoft with the same thing that they do in the financial space, except in a kind of a product bullet point sense. In other words, Microsoft can come up with a slide at some developer show and say, hey, we have this digital assistant, and you can access this digital assistant on phones, which no one owns, or on phones like iPhone and Android, which no one uses Cortana on. You can access it on PCs. You can access it on Xbox One. And you can access it on a new family of ambient devices all around your home. And technically, it's true. You could. But the thing is, no one is actually doing that thing, right? And so just like UWP for many years, one of the primary selling points was it's available on phone too. Yeah, technically. But nobody really ever bought those phones. And UWP has never taken off. And I feel like this is the same kind of thing. It's technically true. Yes, it exists, but no one's going to buy this thing. You know, and a couple of years later, it's not going to be around that long. This is not something that is going to be successful.
Do companies ever do that? I mean, do they ever look at the market and say, oh, yeah, we don't have a chance?
Well, look at I kept thinking like the Kin, right? Like Microsoft brought that to market and boom, like,
Well, there were
other circumstances around that, but it makes you wonder, like, okay, you guys saw what happens when that happens. Like, what if you bring out – I mean, it's not Microsoft's speaker, by the way. It's Harman Kardon's speaker. But you bring this out, and then nobody buys it. So what do? Do you, like –
Well, you must have some idea. Yeah, well, I think some of us suspected for a little while, too, that maybe they would hedge their bets and put another assistant in there, right, that you could swap it out for Cortana Alexa or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is tough. You know, Microsoft is kind of behind here, and it's kind of hard to understand on the client side where something like Cortana could ever hope to catch up to the Google Homes and Amazon Echoes of the world.
Yeah,
it's already a crowded race. That's the thing. If we're just Amazon and Google, okay, but you also have Apple marching in a moment.
Yep. Yeah, and they're going to have part of the market, whether you like it or not. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter how unsophisticated or sophisticated it is. They're going to own a chunk of it. Those people are very loyal, and it's a big base. And Samsung's trying their hand with Bixby, which I think is going to be just as successful as Cortana.
They're a non-starter, too.
Yeah.
It's very much like – it reminds me a lot of Windows Phone, where
you're
marching into a market where there are two solid incumbents, and you don't offer anything better or different.
Right. Yep.
What was the old rule, the old business rule? It has to be 10 times better than the incumbent if it's going to have a chance. I mean, not just a bit better. It has to be a lot better. And this isn't at all.
Yeah, this has been my argument about the Google phones. Like, look, nobody cares about your products, guys. You need to price them better than this. You can't come in and just say we're on par with Apple, so we're going to charge the prices Apple does. You're not going to sell any of those
devices.
Well,
even price wouldn't. I mean,
it's, No, I know. That's not the same thing. But, I mean, you have to make a concession. You know, I used to say this to Microsoft, you know, with the phones. I mean, look, you need to buy, give people an incentive to buy your products. If they're not going to be better, you got to lower the price.
Yeah.
Now, the chat room is saying, but wait a minute. They've got Xbox. Cortana's out there already with Xbox.
Seriously? all right. How many Xbox Ones are there in the world? 25 million.
Yeah.
25
okay.
million.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's compare that to the user base for PCs, which is, you know, Windows 10 PCs, supposedly 500 million. I would say it's probably close to 550.
But there are probably more Xboxes out there than Echoes.
Yes. I actually think Amazon's position is very temporary, by the way. So yeah, Google, how many Android phones are there in the world that can run in the Google Assistant? How many hundreds of millions, you know? How many iPhones are there out that can run Siri? All of them. So hundreds of millions. Those are much bigger markets or user bases or whatever.
Right. And then the other worrisome piece of this, right, is the whole home automation part. I mean, we've seen that Cortana is starting to have home automation pieces added in for, I think, it can work with Nest and forget what else. There's like four things, right? So
they
there's
work
like
with four.
There's like four things. And
so they work with all four of the home automation products that are out there. That's great.
Yeah. And, you know, how many Alexa skills are there for home automation already? Sure. They control everything, right? And
you don't have to be paying too much attention to this world to know that Amazon, but also Google most recently with their routines, which, you know, are basically like these batch files where you kind of put stuff together and you make a command like, good night. And
right.
The shades go down, the lights go off, the security system comes on, your alarm gets set, the bedtime story starts getting rid of the kid, you know, read to the kid in his room. And, you know, this whole series of things can kind of happen. And me, of course, my phone just kicked in and tried to turn off the lights. That's hilarious. It literally, the Google Assistant on my phone said, this is what she said, or he, whatever it is, said, sweet dreams in his little smiley face. So, isn't that cute? I don't know.
Yeah.
Trying to remain positive, as I do. But I just don't see it.
Yeah.
This is a market that Google is going to have a hard time catching up with. Yeah. I mean, Amazon is 800 lengths ahead. Google has the horsepower to get there.
Yeah.
But so even Google's going to have a hard time.
Yeah. And by the way, that's the thing. You could make the argument for Microsoft as you can for Google that this is central to their business aspirations. You know, that being the AI behind the personal assistant that people use digitally is super important to these companies, right? I'm actually not 100% sure it's super important to Amazon, to be honest. You know, if the Echo business disappeared today, you know, like whatever. I mean, I'm not sure that would be a huge thing for Amazon.
No, I'm sure Amazon's plan B is, we'll integrate it with Google Home. Because really, shopping is what they care about.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So they can put those skills on Google Home, the shopping stuff. It's fine. Yeah. Microsoft has the brain power. What they, I think, lack is the delivery vehicle. You know, I think the beauty for Google in this space is that they have the brain power like Microsoft does. They have the cloud-based AI, machine learning, whatever you want to call it stuff. They also own the client, you know, and it's huge.
There's a certain, I thought Satya Nadella had this. There's a certain discipline that's required. And Steve Jobs always said that saying no was maybe the most important thing he could do. Not saying yes, but saying no.
But what if an OEM comes to you and says, hey, we'll pay you to put your assistant on our speaker. You want to take our money?
Yeah, but how much money could it be?
Exactly. How much money
know.
Is Harman? Harman Kardon, by the way, owned by Samsung.
Yeah, also weird.
Yeah, a lot of little weirdness.
Well, another reason why this is a kind of who cares, because
it's really
how much effort are they going to put into it? When they made the deal with Microsoft, they weren't owned by Samsung.
Oh, that could be. That could be. The other thing is, if Harman Kardon exits, at least we'll have all of those other Cortana speakers to fall back on.
Crickets.
Yeah. Strange. All right.
Yeah.
I think we've beaten this one to death.
I want it to be good. I would like to see there be even more competition in this speaker market and alternatives for people who do like using Cortana. But I worry, like, how long are they going to stay in?
Do you using Cortana? What? Are you like, do you wish
no,
you
could? No, I do not. I am not in that group.
Yeah, well, I wonder who is.
That's the thing. Like, Windows Phone actually did have a value to it, and it did have advantages. It did have things that it did better than Android and iOS. Yeah. And there's still people today, even though it makes no sense now, latching on to some of those things and grasping them desperately. Cortana, I can't say that the service itself has any advantages over the other assistants. The one advantage, I suppose, is that it's built into Windows 10, which is the operating system I happen to use during the day on PC.
No, and it's built into many Office applications now, right? So it's under the covers in some ways, but it lets you do certain things, like ask about your calendar if you want to do that.
Right? If I can right-click on a word in Edge and find out a definition or learn more about it in a pane or something, that's useful. Yeah. But it doesn't make me want to use Cortana somewhere else. You know,
I don't use voice assistants at all because I am somebody who types, even like on my phone, I type questions into my phone.
I do the same. That's old school again. Old school, right? Yeah.
We're just old.
Well, I'm not saying Microsoft should kill Cortana by any means. In fact,
they made
a deal with Amazon. It's going to be in the Echo.
Here's the problem. It's the same slow motion car crash all over again.
It does feel that way.
It's hard watching Windows Phone happen again. Because, again, you feel like they had something that was working, could have been great. They're one of the few companies that can do this.
Excuse me?
That was like in stereo for me. I got to hear it real
quick. I almost caught that, but
sorry, guys.
My fingers aren't fast enough on the buttons.
Sorry.
That was some grassy knoll stuff right there. So,
Mary Jo was the lone shooter.
Yeah. I think I saw smoke coming from over toward Mary Jo's toilet paper rolls. whatever that is. I don't know. I feel bad because I feel, you know, like I said, Microsoft's one of the few companies that can do this. They could do a great job at it. This AI machine learning cloud-based stuff is a skill for them. It's a huge thing. And they're lacking. Yeah. They just don't have the client.
On the bright side. Guardians of the Galaxy episode 8, they can say, hey, Cortana, and it'll be nostalgic. It'll be fun.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
And then a voice would just say, I'm sorry. I don't understand that. That would be the whole
Cortana's
interaction.
Cortana's going to be in Skype, though, right?
Yeah.
What does that mean? Yeah. I can ask her to call?
So it's in the form of a bot.
I want her to be the Skype lady. Instead of that weird...
There is some element of that. So... they announced this a long time ago, by the way. In fact, when they announced that this was available, I was like, wasn't this already a thing? You could install, and now it's just going to be there like a Cortana bot. And so you can explicitly have a conversation with Cortana through Skype, which to me is passingly useful. The more sophisticated usage there is you're having a conversation with someone else. And you say, I'm texting with Mary Jo, and I say, hey, let's go see a movie on Friday night. And then Cortana is going to pop up and say, you know, like Clippy, it looks like you're trying to see a movie on Friday night. Would you like me to help? And it's what it's going to do is use, I guess we'll call it machine learning or whatever, to sort of understand what it is you're saying and then pop up at times when it makes sense to do so, to help you out, to order a pizza, to look, you know, hey, what was the capital of Massachusetts again? Or what, you know, whatever the question might be, Cortana can spring up like a little specter at the bottom of your, you know, Skype window and help you out. I guess. Hooray.
Hooray, hooray.
Yep. Only in the U.S., though, so that was the other issue.
Like many Cortana services.
Yeah, I feel compelled to say that because I get complaints from everybody who lives outside of the United States. And by the way, I'm surprised to say it's a lot of people. They're getting a little tired of this. Seems like a lot of stuff, especially for Microsoft, comes out U.S. only at first and sometimes stays there. So we'll see what happens.
Let's talk Office. Microsoft wants to have 2/3 of its users in the cloud. Does that mean subscribing, or does that mean like actually using
Right. What does
cloud
that mean?
Office?
Please,
what does that mean?
I have at least twice in a panicked form contacted Mary Jo about this story because I am. This is confusing. Explain why this. First of all,
okay.
So the backstory of this is strange.
Okay, here's the backstory of this. So a month ago, Rajesh Jha, who is the head of Microsoft Office Applications. He, by the way, is a member of the senior leadership team who you kind of never see in public. You never hear from him. You never see him. He was speaking at a Deutsche Bank conference, investor conference. I just saw the transcript of this by accident yesterday on the Microsoft investor site. So it's a month old. And I was like, oh, I wonder what he said. He never talks in public. He said to the people at the conference that Microsoft right now has 50% of its Office users in the cloud. So he's saying 50% of all Office users are on Office 365 already.
Wait, hold on. Okay, excuse me. Are we sure that's what that means?
So that is what he said.
Okay. Because that doesn't seem possible.
That's what he said, but that doesn't actually I've never seen them say that before. Instead, what they did say during their last earnings call was more than 50% of our Office revenues are now coming from Office 365.
Yes, that I understand. But the problem is the user base thing is it's all the people over the years who bought Office, some version of Office, or got some version of Office with some PC or whatever it was, never upgraded. And they still use Office 2013 or Office 2007 or whatever the heck it might be. Yep. You know, revenues, of course, you would think, you know, new Office revenues or as we would call them, Office revenues every quarter. Yeah. Over 50% of those would come from the cloud. Like, that makes sense to me. People aren't going to Best Buy, buying a box with Office in it and bringing it home and installing it on their computer.
Right. Well, I should also say this is limited. He's talking about commercial Office users, so business Office users.
Okay. No, that's good.
Okay. So, there's a number we never had heard. 50% of all Office users are already using the cloud version of Office. The next thing he says to the group is, and by our fiscal 2019, which starts next year, it starts on July 1st, 2018, we think we'll have 2/3 of our business Office customers using Office 365. That's a huge number and a huge jump, right? We don't know when during fiscal 2019.
But there's no way. There is no way that's true. I mean, don't feel like that.
Why does that seem? I mean,
it seems very, very fast and big.
In our previous conversation,
why doesn't business want to use Office 365?
No. It's not. It's not that they don't want to use it. This is inevitable. The truth is, most businesses will be on Office in the cloud versus, say, Office. What do they call it? Perpetual license.
Perpetual license.
Of course. The thing is, you know, one of the things I've actually written about that's tied to the conversation we had earlier about the financial stuff is that Microsoft will sporadically reveal how many monthly active users there are on Office commercial and or on Office. Office 365 commercial versus Office 365 consumer. They don't do it every quarter. Like I said, this is actually the Office 365 is the thing I was specifically referring to. It's aggravating because you're trying to track the progress of this thing, right? And so you can make a little chart that shows like, oh, look, this thing's going up. And of course it's going up, you know. We also had the conversation you guys might recall in the past where I was saying, you know, the number seems kind of small. I think it crossed 100 million at one point and went to like 130 million. Is that right? The latest number.
Yeah, around
maybe.
There. I think so. Yeah.
And I said, you know, in back in the day, Microsoft used to always talk about 1.5 billion Office users and like 100 million or 130 million, pick the number you want, seems like really small compared to that. Like that this Office 365, this notion of Office in the cloud is maybe not as successful, at least not as quickly successful as maybe we had assumed in the past. But the thing that somebody from Microsoft reminded me about this was that those people represent ongoing revenues, right? This is not a one-time shot. A customer doesn't pay Microsoft for Office 365 in 2016 and walk away and use that for 5 years. They come back and they pay for it again the next year. That's how it works. It's a subscription. So those 100-something million people, users, customers, whatever, are much more valuable to them than the hundreds and hundreds of millions of people who acquired Office 7, 8, whatever years ago and are never going to buy it again. They're different types of customers. So, but still, you know, 2/3 of Microsoft's revenues come from business commercial customers. That user base has to be humongous.
I know.
Right? So if the number really is 130, let's say it's 130, I'll just pull that one out. This guy from Microsoft is saying that by fiscal year 2019, which starts July 1st, 2018, which is only about 9 months from now or whatever that works out to be, suddenly 2/3 of their entire Office commercial user base, not revenues, Right?
Right.
But he must be mixing it up.
He must
mean revenues.
I thought so, and I went back and looked at the transcript, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, no. I obviously reported it correctly. I don't mean it like that. I mean the guy. Yeah. Doesn't seem to make sense.
Well, then he went on to say, this is even another stat you're kind of like, what? Microsoft expects 70% of its Exchange and Outlook users to be using the cloud rather than on-premises versions of those products in fiscal 2019. Okay, 70% of Exchange, right? And he said, we are running about a year ahead of where we thought we were going to be with this 2 years ago.
Okay. I don't have any particular understanding of where that was. There was an understanding for many years that email was the low hanging fruit of cloud computing, that if you're going to get businesses to go to the cloud, email would be right. The first and most obvious. But I actually think that perspective has changed since then, but okay, whatever. It's still a major workload.
No one from Microsoft has contacted me since I posted this yesterday saying, by the way, he was wrong. You know, he didn't mean to say that he meant revenues. So I think this is they are standing on this number as being a correct number. So the question that many of us were debating on Twitter yesterday about this was, okay, how are they going to make this happen? Like, are they going to somehow change licensing or pricing or do something to try to push more people to the cloud? Or do they just think the cloud momentum is so strong that it's just going to pick up?
Let me do what I did with Microsoft Edge when I doubted those numbers, which is offer a possibility. Okay. Consider the average enterprise. There's some combination of on-prem hybrid cloud services, right? Then very few of them are probably 100% in any one category. Is it possible that when you say we're going to have 2/3 of our commercial customers, we're talking users essentially, on the cloud, it doesn't necessarily mean 100% in the cloud, right? That some piece of that enterprise will be in the cloud, right?
Yeah.
So in other words, I talked about low-hanging fruit. I would say the low-hanging fruit today is actually storage. And so maybe there are customers who do their own Exchange, but they have OneDrive for Business in the cloud.
Right.
Or they have some customers, some users on Office 365 Pro Plus. They have some that are not, but they're in the 2/3 because they're there in some capacity.
Yeah, I bet that could be one way they do sure.
That's the only thing that would make sense to me.
Yeah, so the whole hybrid idea, like even if you're somebody who has half your workloads in Exchange on-prem but half in the cloud, you still count as in the cloud, right?
Yep. Okay.
So what slows this down is that people have a perpetual license of Office, and there is no incentive whatsoever for them to change, right?
Right. Well, that's one thing.
Like, why would I buy Office 365? I've got Office. You're telling me there's something new in it that's I gotta have.
Well, no. Yeah. Hey, Leo, you're not describing an agile business for starters.
They're
going to stop giving you security patches for Office. Like right now, Office 2007. As of, I think, today is no longer, or yesterday, no longer getting any more security patches.
So there's data points that he has you don't have, which one is the curve, the growth curve right now.
Yep.
But the other is what Microsoft might be doing to strong-arm people who are using perpetual license. I mean, if it weren't for the perpetual license owners, then if you were starting from scratch, you'd buy Office 365, right?
Well, this is a... Yes, you would, of course. Yeah, this is a very classic problem, right? You can claim this huge user base, which is a nice big number, 1.5 billion. None of them are giving you any money anymore. Like, this is money that's been spent. It's done. It's been accounted for. There's only a small percentage of rebuying Office, you know.
Right.
Or you can have like a much smaller number, but they're paying you every single year, you know. And the one thing I do know about Microsoft and financials is that they love steady income. Like, they prefer steady income over everything. The problem with the 3-year Windows life cycle wasn't that we were only able to add new features to Windows every 3 years. It's that we only got a big hit on revenues once every 3 years. You know, what they want is a more even keel with fewer higher valleys and peaks or whatever. So Office 365 provides that. And in the long run, it's better for them to have us, like, you know, whatever that is, 1/10 the user base or whatever. And paying annually, right? It's beautiful. That's what you want. That's sustainable. Yeah. That's my guess. I was so confused by the story. I just it doesn't.
I like your guess.
Yeah, it's the only thing that makes sense to me.
Yeah. Yep. But anyway, the takeaway for those listening from home is, as I saw somebody tweet yesterday, if you're a partner or a customer and you're not thinking about cloud, it's time you think about the cloud.
Oh, so Leo had asked, you know, why are people not, you know, why would they not move to the cloud? There are many reasons, right? Regulatory, right. You know, et cetera.
Right. Also,
the people that run your Exchange server, for example, you know, one of the tricky situations, you know, you come to your IT department, you're like, hey, I heard about this cloud thing. You think we should get on board with that? They're going to say no because, you know, that's their job
that
person is not necessarily very qualified to make that decision.
Can you still buy a perpetual license Office?
And you can. And in fact, in the latter half of next year, towards the end of the year, there will be a new version of Office Perpetual.
Oh, Leo, you might have missed this bit. Yeah, that's right. So Office 2019
is what we're calling it.
Yeah, so this is how I described Office 2019. They're going to bring you all of the features that Office 365 subscribers already have today, but they're going to do it next fall. So I call it yesterday's Office Tomorrow.
That sounds about right. See, that's why I like the subscription. I know why Microsoft likes the subscription. It's an annuity for them. Yep. But I do understand why people don't want data in the cloud. There's lots of reasons for that.
There are. Yep.
That's part of it, right? In other words,
data,
you know,
thing, the GDP,
we can
GDP.
Talk like products like Exchange or OneDrive for Business. But those products contain data, right? So, you know, moving email to the cloud sounds great, but if that means that your data is going to be in the cloud and, from a regulation standpoint, you can't do that, then that's kind of a non-starter.
Yeah.
You know, all right, well, we'll move on from that. That's an interesting – he probably just misspoke, right? I mean, come on.
Well,
Is he just some guy? He's some sales guy.
No,
right?
He is one of the senior leadership team guys.
Oh, well, he knows that. He goes in those meetings every week.
I don't believe the guy misspoke. Or if he did, I think they would have cleaned that transcript up really quickly.
Yes.
Yes. Because, right. That's right.
And it may be like their quarterly reports. They may have some fudge factors in there. It may be, as you guys suspected.
It's very intriguing they threw these numbers out there because, Paul said, they haven't been throwing a lot of numbers out there.
Well, it's aspirational. It's not like somebody's going to hold their feet to the fire if they're wrong and say, we really thought that would happen.
But
he was, wasn't he speaking? It was basically to investors, right?
Oh, man.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Well, Mike, you know, if fiscal 2019 comes and you haven't met this target, I mean, you've
remind
just sent
me
a really bad
message. Never to have an initial public offering. I
I know,
just
right?
Remind
no
me.
Kidding.
Sure.
Yep. I don't not to go public. I'm just going to stay right here in private. let's talk about I was very excited when I read an OnTech article on the new 8th generation Intel processors. There's a sentence.
Yeah.
There's a sentence that sounds like a geek. Because it's the first time we're going to see a kind of a generic desktop processor with 6 cores, 12
it
threads.
It is cool. Yeah.
It's going to be fast.
There's a lot of misconceptions around this generation because Intel has completely screwed it up. With the mobile processors that came out first, it's really just Kaby Lake processors in quad core form.
No,
which, by the way,
Coffee Lake is the new.
For the 8th gen, the mobile processors are actually Kaby Lake gen.
I know
technology.
Yeah,
when you move forward to the Coffee Lake processors, which are for the desktop, which were just announced. Same thing, same sort of benefit. In this case, you go from 4 to 6 cores instead of from 2 to 4. For certain work, multi-core type workloads, gaming, obviously, but video rendering, whatever, massive benefits. You know, for day-to-day use, not so much. But it is architecturally actually not a new generation. The difference is in this case, they require a new plug on the motherboard, so it's not backwards compatible, nor are the other ones forwards compatible.
It's the same socket. It's different wiring, which really is weird.
Which is part of the reason I think they changed the name, whatever. Yeah. But the really goofy part about this is going to come in the future because there's a coming generation of, and I forgot the code name for this thing, of processors that will actually be in the next generation. But they're going to market them as it's Cannon Lake. And they're going to market those as 8th generation core processors too, for some reason.
Oh.
I actually think they're going to change their mind when that time comes, right?
It's already way too confusing.
It's terrible. And there's some Atom / Pentium chips coming as well, which will be marketed as 8th gen, whatever. But anyway, I guess the point is, it doesn't. Let's not worry about the marketing stuff. If you're a gamer or a video editor, or you need these kinds of processors, they just got way, way better. And that's true on laptops, and it's true on desktops. And so on laptops, those parts are actually very hard to come by. Intel is really trying to push them, so they've not raised the prices, which is amazing. And so if you buy a next generation, you know, Lenovo X1 Carbon or, you know, whatever the top end HP is, whatever the top end Dell is, presumably whatever the top end Microsoft Surface device is, you can get this quad-core chip. It's actually a big deal. For certain workloads, and same thing on the desktop.
Yeah, this is gonna be a big deal. Yeah, is because really they're almost at the limits in terms of process. I think they're still. This is a 10 nanometer or 15. I think it's still
15. No, it's 14.
14. I mean, yeah,
it's 14. But I was I talked to someone about this, and they were telling me that, you know, because I was saying, you know, Intel has kind of put off going to 10 nanometers so many times. They were supposed to do it, and the suggestion was that, you know, this stuff is actually a little more complicated than that, and that Intel's 14 nanometer process is, in almost always, more sophisticated than a 10 nanometer process from a competitor anyway. So they're already getting like incredible efficiency and performance out of a 14 nanometer part. It's like, it's kind of a, why on earth would you change this if you didn't have to? Right. There's no gigantic benefit to it.
And clock speeds haven't really changed much over several generations, but putting in 50% more cores does make a difference when you have a multi-threaded application. And I'm guessing, you maybe know this better, that because quad core and even dual core processors are kind of the mainstream now, I would imagine if you're writing software, you're making it multi-threaded, right? I mean, I'm sure Office is not, but.
Well, like, you know, by the way, it probably is in some ways. Like Excel probably does things.
Yeah, recalc in Excel should be faster. Yeah,
yeah. But those, yeah, you know, there's not a lot of new software being written today, you know, for PCs that isn't games, right? And so things like Photoshop will be up. You know, have already been updated to support this kind of thing.
They take advantage of it for sure. Yeah.
Lightroom will do it. I'm sure, you know, various 3D packages, etc. But yeah, it's kind of like.
It's
we used
gaming.
To think it was
for gaming.
Gaming, right, and workstation type stuff.
Yep.
All
right, let's take a break. Pick back of the book coming up, including a fix for the BSOD from the big person on campus, Mary Jo Foley. But first, a word from
big
word.
Big person on campus.
Big person. On
CUNY campus.
Yeah. Yeah, she's the... Well, it used to be BMOC, but that goes back to the 50s.
It's the big Mary Jo on campus.
The big
big MJF on campus.
Oh, I like it. I like it. She's got a tip for us in a second. But first, a word from WordPress, my blog host. I love WordPress. You can see what I do with WordPress. I love it. It's at leolaporte.com. I was a WordPress fan for years. In fact, I for many years in the 2000s ran a self-hosted WordPress blog, but I've moved it all to WordPress.com now. They do the hosting, and by the way, very affordably, less than it costs for me to have my own host, plus the time it took for me to maintain my server. I don't have to do it anymore. They do all the work. They keep the security patches up to date. With my business plan, I get all the plugins I got before. I'm using as an example, the Google AMP plugin to speed up my page loads on mobile. I use their fabulous Akismet anti-spam plugins. Actually, WordPress commenting. For a long time, I used third-party commenting. WordPress commenting is the best in class. It's fantastic. It's just a great platform. No wonder 28% of the internet, 28% runs on WordPress. That's huge. Now, if you're a business, and I see a trend in business that drives me nuts. More and more, and it's small business people. But I'll call a handyman, a plumber, I'll call a restaurant or whatever, and I want to know more about them. And I go to the web, and they say, go to my Facebook page or go to my Twitter account. That is terrible. You don't control that. Facebook does. Twitter does. You could be pulled off in a minute. And many of your users, they want to see your site. So I understand why most small businesses don't have their own websites. They say, well, I can't afford that. I don't have time to spend on running a site, and I can't afford to hire a consultant. You don't need to. trust me, just go right now to wordpress.com/windows and just start your site. You'll get 15% off just because you went there. 15% off at wordpress.com/windows. Pick a template and start putting stuff in. It's easy to change templates. They have hundreds of them. They're gorgeous. I just was visiting Andy Anako's site. He uses a new template that I really like, kind of a grid template. They have all of this, you know, fancy stuff that, well, you know, a lot of high-end publications run on WordPress. Quartz, which everybody raved about when Quartz came out. Man, this is modern, state-of-the-art. Wow, this is an incredible design. It was WordPress. So you're getting state-of-the-art design for your business. You're putting yourself online, which means your customers can know more about you. It's a platform so they can share about you. It's very easy. They can talk about you on their LinkedIn, their Twitter, their Facebook. So you get all of that automatically. Built-in search engine optimization. It's just fantastic. Come see why 28% of all the websites, including mine, run on WordPress, the world's most popular and most powerful site-building platform. I don't even like to call it a site-building platform. It's your new home on the net. You even get a domain name from them if you want. Go to wordpress.com/windows and 15% off any new plan purchase. Create your website. Tell the world, I'm here. We got a business you want to try. It's the best way to do it. wordpress.com/windows. We thank them for their support and for all those years of running Leoville, my blog. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, we're talking Windows, and we're in the back of the book section of this fine show now, which means we go to Paul Thurrott for his tip of the week.
So if you are on the Windows Insider Program, and a lot of you probably are, I would imagine, you should know that we are now in what I call the magic window, which is that wonderful time period between the completion of one version of Windows 10 and the start of development of another. Now, in this case, of course, they've already started the development of the next one. But if you're on the fast ring, actually, or the slow ring, or the release preview ring of the Windows Insider Program on any given PC, you're in the RS3 train right now. But because that version of Windows has been completed and you have that final version of Windows already, you can right now quit the Insider Program, remove the Windows Insider bits from your computer. You can leave the system. And you can go back onto the general available train, for lack of a better term, without any repercussions. In other words, if you tried to do this 2 weeks ago or 2 weeks from now, you'd actually have to reset your computer to get back to the normal current version of Windows. It's just that period of time where the development version of Windows lines up with the shipping version of Windows. Now, that's going to change. Because tomorrow or the next day or sometime next week, Donna Sakar is going to release the first version of RS4, the next version of Windows 10, to the fast ring. And when that thing becomes available, you can no longer leave. You can only upgrade to that next version. So if you want to get off the train for a little while, if you want to stay on RS3 for now, experience the normal update schedule and so forth, and maybe not worry about the first couple of months, which is, you know, not a bad idea, frankly, because whenever any new version of Windows starts up, it's a little disruptive, you know, in the beginning. This is the time to do so. The problem is, by the time you hear this, that window might have already closed because, like I said, it could close at any time. So it's one of those things. I wrote about this the other day. Someone on Twitter said, well, can I wait until Monday or can I wait until – I was like, dude, you're either going to leave or you're not going to leave because you might wake up tomorrow and the new build's out and then you can't leave. So if you want to do it, now's the time to do it. Unless, of course, you're listening to this later, in which case that time has already passed.
It's a short window. It's a tiny window.
It's a short window of indeterminate length. Yeah, which is the problem.
I did that last time around. And
yep.
I
did it with
happy.
All my systems because actually I'm working on the book, right?
Lock
so I'm upgrading
down. Yeah.
The book. I need the system to stay on this system. I can't go to RS4 right now because I need to make sure I'm on RS3. Right. So I've actually done it everywhere. The other thing... as I screw up my computer completely. I don't know what that just happened. All right, so as far as the software pick of the week is Outlook Mobile on iOS and Android was just updated with some major updates related to the calendar. This is pretty exciting for people who are waiting for this stuff because, you know, with Outlook Mobile, there's always like a couple of things that people can't use it for whatever reason. And so there's a bunch of stuff in here, but the two big ones are synced shared calendars, meaning that people on Office 365 and Outlook.com can now share from within the app. They don't have to go up to the web to do that. They can handle sharing invitations, share calendars from the app, et cetera, which is very good. The other one's kind of, it's kind of a weird little footnote, but I've received many messages from people who think this is the biggest thing in the world. On iOS only right now, it's coming to Android soon, you can now add a message when you're responding to a meeting invite, which, of course, is something you can do on basically all of the other Outlook clients. And so I think everyone kind of understands, like, Outlook Mobile was something that came from Acompli, I think, and it was its own app. It was a separate app. Microsoft has turned it into Outlook, and they've been busy kind of cross-pollinating features because there's some really cool stuff in Outlook on mobile that's going to move into Outlook on other platforms. But there's also these crucial Outlook features that we've been using for many, many years in the Windows space, and they're kind of making their way to the mobile one. So the ability to add a message when responding to a meeting invite, I know it sounds like a little thing, but it's actually kind of a huge deal. You want to say, yes, I can come, and then here's a note because, you know, whatever the note might be. So that's kind of cool.
Should I, is it, I mean, I'm really all Google. I use Google Calendar and Google Mail. Is it okay for that?
Yeah, you can use it with Google accounts. You don't get all of the like, for example, does that feature work on
Probably not. That's an, it might
Google
be an exchange
calendar.
Feature.
Certainly not. Yeah, it's probably an Exchange / Office 360 Outlook.com feature. But they do work. I mean, depending on your mindset, the Outlook mobile stuff is either the greatest thing that's ever been invented or the greatest atrocity that mankind has ever been foisted with. But, like, it's not like other mobile apps in the sense that it has a lot of stuff in it, you know, mail, contacts, calendar, to-dos, and then it integrates with all kinds of other things, including like online storage systems. You can do everything from one app. You know, it's kind of not the mobile way of doing things. But for guys who came from the Windows world where Outlook does most of those things in one app too, it's like, yeah, nice. This is what I want. So it just, it kind of depends. It does work pretty well with the Google stuff, but you're going to get the big the biggest benefit if you're in the Microsoft space.
Yeah, it does support Yahoo, iCloud, Google, and IMAP. I'm looking at it right now. So
yeah, it's just a question of whether it supports it fully for all these new features.
Right. You know, no, I could believe it wouldn't.
Yeah.
Yes, I believe that.
Yep.
Cool. I guess that takes us to the long-awaited Enterprise Pick of the Week with Mary Jo Foley.
Yes, so we've been hearing there have been some problems with one of the patches that Microsoft released this week on Patch Tuesday. If you're on build Windows 10 1703, the original Creators Update, and or Windows Server 2016, there were two patches that went out. One was KB4041676 for Windows 10, and KB4041691 for Windows Server. People who applied these patches started reporting today that they were having blue screens of death, their machines were hanging, there were a lot of really bad things going on. And then there were just kind of random posts showing up in Microsoft's forums like, hey, what's going on? It seems like these patches are bad. It sounds to me, based on some people I'm talking to here, that this has to do with Microsoft accidentally applying both the Delta update and the cumulative updates on a machine together. So if that is true, that means either it should mean only business customers will be affected. Because if this is right, Windows 10 Delta and cumulative updates were both published to Windows Server Update Services, WSUS, and System Center Configuration Manager, that is a situation that should not happen. And when it happened, it started causing people to blue screen. The reason I'm saying it should be only a business thing is, you know, consumers don't use WSUS. They use Microsoft Update typically for their automatic updates. So the advice seems to be right now, if you are somebody who is affected by this, and you're a systems administrator, you should resynchronize your WSUS SCCM server and the Delta update binaries will just go away. So not a good situation today if you were somebody who automatically applied these patches as soon as they came out this week.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but it seems like there is a fix and you have to resynchronize. There seems to be some information. I'm looking at Taro Alhonen, who listens to our show a lot. He's got a link in his Twitter account to something on docs.microsoft.com that is explaining that Delta and cumulative updates are inadvertently both being installed, so your computer will no longer boot, and here are the steps you can do to recover.
Yeah, because I had no problems on any of my machines, and then people who had problems said, like, it happened to all my machines.
Now, that makes sense.
Hey, guys.
Yeah.
Yes.
I apologize for interrupting. I just my wife just texted me and reminded me I actually have to go.
Okay. So, well, let's open a beer.
I have a bus to make, so I'm going to just go.
But, goodbye. Goodbye,
right.
Paul.
Okay.
Sorry.
We're going to open a beer in your name, Paul.
We will.
Okay. See you later. All right. I guess that means you and me. Uh-oh. There you go. I turned you off.
You okay?
Instead of Paul.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Ta-ta. So, beer pick of the week.
It means more for us, Mary Jo.
It does. And I think, Leo, you would probably like this beer.
It looks really good.
A lot.
Yeah.
So Firestone Walker Brewing in Paso Robles makes some amazing dark beers, especially stouts and porters. They have a very famous oatmeal stout that's called Firestone Walker Merlin. And it's really widely available in the United States. They have now taken that and done a derivative that's called Mocha Merlin, Firestone Walker Mocha Merlin. So they take this oatmeal stout, they add coffee, they add some lactose sugar to it, and mix it all together, and it tastes like a mocha.
I want it.
It really does. I had one this week, and I was like, man, it really does taste like a mocha.
A mocha that gets you drunk? I'm in.
It's all in. And I don't know how widely they're going to distribute this one. Probably not as widely as the regular Merlin, but it's an excellent beer if you like oatmeal stouts.
I like stouts. I do like oatmeal
stouts.
Yeah,
I do too. Yeah. Same. Yeah.
I see it's in a can, so at least you'll be able to.
So look for the Mocha Merlin if you want to try another great Firestone Walker beer.
Yeah. Sounds awesome.
Yes.
Well, speaking of awesome, well done, Mary Jo Foley. You held down the fort. Paul ran out the door. That's how well you did.
I know.
Turned out we didn't need a gong.
We didn't even need the gong at the end. That was good.
Paul's going back to work at therott.com, therott.com. And you go back to work at allaboutmicrosoft.com on ZDNet. That's your blog. We do this show every Wednesday with Paul and Mary Jo around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. So please stop by. Will you both be back? It was nice of you because you could have been at your apartment, but you decided to come over to.
Yeah. I said, let me keep him company.
That was nice of you. And thanks to the folks at CUNY,
too. Yeah, we'll
both
be back home.
Yep.
Thanks to CUNY. That was awesome that you guys let us come and raid your classroom here.
So is Jeff Jarvis there or is he? He's probably.
No, he's
home.
Not here.
Figures. Yep. He's at home or in Germany. All right.
Yep.
Well, it was great talking to you. Everybody should come back next week for Paul and Mary Jo back in their respective abodes.
We should be home.
And you can catch this show on our website, twit.tv/ww, if you want to download copies instead of listening live. You can also subscribe. You can even listen on your Echo. I bet you Cortana has a way of doing it. But on the Echo, you say, hey, Echo, listen to Windows Weekly on TuneIn. TuneIn's the key because that's the provider, TuneIn Internet Radio. Or you can say, hey, Echo, listen to Twit Live on TuneIn. You'll hear the live stream. Either way, we hope you'll come back next week. We'd love to see you. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye, Mary Jo.
Bye-bye.